Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
Welcome to the New York Times Bobcast, your language too vast for any training model to grasp. Of music, news, and criticism, I'm your host, John Caramonica. I know for years you've been listening to podcasts and thinking, these guys need a theme song. Why don't they have theme songs? Well, what did I spend the last few days doing? Well, playing around with Suno and Udio, which are two of the leading music AI interfaces, to approximate what a podcast theme song might sound like. I put some prompts in and came up with a bunch of different options, which I'm going to be sprinkling through the show this week, which is completely devoted to contemporary uses of artificial intelligence in music. We are going to be talking with Rachel Metz, who covers artificial intelligence more broadly at Bloomberg, and Kristen Robinson, who covers the music business, including how the record industry is trying to use AI for Billboard. What you were hearing at the beginning of the show, you were hearing, there's no name, but it was made with Suno. It's the first track that was generated with the prompt of asking for a podcast theme song that sounded like 90s Midwest emo. And I'm not going to lie, they definitely got that parched thing down. They definitely got that sort of dry male vocal thing down. It's a little unsettling, but also kind of a joyful experience. As I said, throughout the show, we're going to be playing a few other things that I'll be throwing to. But for now, let's get into the conversation. Rachel Metz is here. Kristen Robinson is here. Welcome to Popcast.
Thank you.
Everybody coming in virtually, but hopefully authentically, not artificially today. Fingers crossed. So I know I've been keeping tabs on what's been happening with AI music making intermittently for the past, let's say, 6 to 12 months. But both of you, this is a very, very key part of your beats. Rachel, you cover AI more broadly, music being one segment of that. Kristen, you cover the music business more broadly, AI being one segment of that. And one of the reason I wanted to have both of you on is I think you're approaching it through different lenses, the same subject matter through different lenses through your work. So I thought it'd be interesting overlap and intersection of perspectives. Can we start with a thing that happened recently that felt itchy to me? And maybe we can start with this as a fact as and also an indicator of what's to come, and maybe then rewind and say, how do we get to it? Randy Travis is and has been for many years one of my favorite country singers, suffered a stroke in 2013, I believe, and no longer can sing. And as a Randy Travis fan, someone who grew up on the late 80s and early 90s hits, you know, is a big loss, but also I cover new music for a living. I accept that not everything gold can last, and that's okay. And all of a sudden I get a press release advertising a new Randy Travis song. And like instantly I feel like the muscles at the bottom of my neck, the top of my shoulders stiffen. I feel the discomfort. And so what they've done, this is a song called Where That Came From. And so let's listen to 15 seconds of this.
And it ain't like I ain't been trying to find someone.
So If you are a fan of Randy Travis, you'll recognize the voice. It feels mostly like a Randy Travis voice. The inflections feel like a good approximation of a Randy Travis inflection. What you're actually hearing is an AI model trained on vocal stems of about 40 Randy Travis songs, overlaid on top of a guide demo vocal sung by a different singer, theoretically in the mode of Randy Travis. The song itself, I think, is a demo. The actual song was written for Randy Travis many years ago, so it's not totally out of the blue where they got these lyrics from or the idea from. But this is likely to be the first of what I imagine would be many posthumous or posthumous-esque recordings for artists who no longer can make original recordings. When y'all encountered this, just as a fact, did this just seem, this is normal, this is where it's going? Or did anything about this feel a little bit itchy? Maybe, Rachel, let's start with you, and then we'll go with Kristen.
For me, the first thing I think is, I have some questions about consent. Whose idea was this? Did Randy want to do this? How do we know that he wanted to do this? And I if somebody has already died and their estate, they can make those decisions then. And that seems totally fair to me. But if someone is still alive, I think then it brings up some really tricky questions. But aside from what does it sound like and do we enjoy how it sounds or is it creeping us out?
And I think the consent question is really interesting. There's a CBS morning show or Sunday morning show segment about this, and he's in these rooms, but so are cameras. I don't know who was in those rooms when no cameras were there. And also he can speak a little bit, but not extensively. We don't genuinely have a way of knowing. One of the actual things that comes up in the CBS Sunday morning segment, the interviewer asks, Randy's there with his wife. In essence, you have thoughts, but you are not able to express them. And Randy sort of nods and said, yes. Do we know how robust that process? We just don't know. And I think the consent thing is real. I have no idea if Randy Travis wants this to happen. I've got to assume his family wants it to happen. His record label, who has him under contract, wants it to happen.
Bingo.
And it's striking that this happened in Nashville, Tennessee, being the first state that passed a law attempting to protect the rights of artists to their voice against duplications, the Elvis Act or whatever that was passed a little while ago. Kristen, how did this strike you both as an individual data point, but also in the broader conversation of how certain artists are starting to, dare I say, weaponize AI in their own favor?
I thought this was a really fascinating use case. This is not the first time that we've seen kind of something like this happen. Maybe it was 6 months ago now, but Edith Piaf, the old French singer, La Vie en Rose, she passed away in 1963. So she's been gone. And her estate worked with Warner Music Group and this film company, and they're going to essentially resurrect her voice using an AI voice model and old recordings. And they're going to use that to help narrate and create this. I'm pretty sure it's like an animated documentary about her life. And they're also using AI to help recreate her likeness. I find that to be really fascinating because when you think about it, I think that consent is at the core of whether or not we feel like these things are okay. And that comes back in Randy Travis's instance as well. But with someone who's truly been deceased for 70 years, I don't know, she could not have conceived of the internet, let alone AI, because she's been gone for so long. So how do we really know whether or not these individuals would have ever been okay with this? That being said, in an estate situation, legally, those decision-making powers have been passed down to probably someone else in her family. I'm not sure exactly. With Randy, it's a little bit different because he's still here. And as long as he's of sound mind and he's able to consent to it, then I think that's okay. But it's been really interesting. My mom is a very big avid watcher of CBS Sunday Morning. And she called me after that came on because she knows that I cover AI and music. And she was saying, I feel like this isn't Randy Travis. To me, this is not Randy Travis. And I thought that was interesting because when I heard it, I considered it in my brain as Randy Travis. So like when I heard it, I was like, yeah, this is the new Randy Travis song. It was using AI to assist it. But she made a really good point. She was like, there was a session singer who sang it. And then they essentially used a voice filter to map that voice, his timbre, his tone over someone else's voice who did a different performance. that was not Randy. And I don't think that either of us is right and wrong. It's just interesting how people can take away from this very different things based on understanding the process of how it's done. But I do think that in general, we feel differently about this if the artist is consenting to it versus if they're not.
And I also do think, as far as whether Randy Travis himself is consenting, truthfully, because of the nature of his injury, I feel like we don't 100% totally understand the depth of his consent, even though he's consenting enough to appear on CBS Sunday Morning, or at least the people who are advocating for him are putting him on CBS Sunday Morning. There's also, I got a press release the other day about a tour, a Randy Travis tour, and I was like, what is happening here?
Whoa.
But what that the tour is this session singer, who I guess I had not previously heard of, but maybe sort of sings in a Randy Travis motif, singing the hits of Randy Travis interspersed with like biographical films and stuff. And Randy Travis will be there, I guess. And it's also, this is also maybe not coincidentally, this is a Warner project as well. So maybe this is an indication that Warner as a label is stepping out and taking more risks. It reminds me a little bit, this is a, Forgive this OG Popcast take, which I do not expect you guys to know. But like when Luke Combs covered Fast Car last year, like my running joke on the show was like, it's a Luke Combs AI cover. Like he didn't change a thing. Like it's literally just Fast Car plugged into a machine and someone pressed a Luke Combs button and then they sang it. And then that's it. Yeah. Nothing else happened. And at the time I said, I would not be surprised if record labels looking for additional commercial angles for their artists, especially artists who maybe are in the mature phase of their career, maybe post peak hit making, if they would not say, hey, what are the 30 essential songs of the 80s? Fire them up in the machine and put the Luke Combs filter on and just see if anything sounds good. See if anything we want to put out. That's what I thought. I was like, that's the worst case scenario. The worst case scenario is we're going to get like 100 different versions of a guy like Luke Combs singing a song like Fast Car. But actually the Randy Travis thing is like lightly more insidious. And Kristen, to your point, what part of that, or maybe more to your mother's point, what part of this is Randy Travis, right? Like the vocal is not, the songwriting is not, it's not written by Randy Travis. It's written by songwriters for Randy Travis X amount of years ago. The vocal tone is computer approximated. What part of that is Randy Travis? I truly don't know. And I wonder, you guys must be encountering philosophical questions of this nature over and over and over again. So I wonder, on the one hand, what part of that is Randy Travis? I'm curious about both of your answers. And also the second question is, does it matter if it is quote unquote Randy Travis? It's Randy Travis in quotes. Does any of the philosophical concern or curiosity matter if it somehow successfully lands between the quote marks?
I think that there's actually going to be a shift in how we view this over time. And I think there already has been. If we look back to about a year ago, that's when I think music related AI had its first big moment with Ghostwriter, with his fake Drake song, Heart on My Sleeve.
R.I.P. Ghostwriter. Yeah. And you had a great run. Big run.
And I think that was a huge moment when it happened. It made all the major news networks, a lot of places didn't even know that there was music-related AI coming out and that people were working on that. And when that happened, I think people had such an extreme reaction to that. And I think that's very merited. It's the first time we had ever seen it. But fast forward a year later and we have the Randy Travis thing. We have Edith Piaf. I interviewed Lauv 6 months ago. He translated one of his songs into Korean and then mapped his AI voice model over it and released it.
To be fair, Lauv does sound like an AI voice without any AI technology. Like Lauv voice is just pretty much AI.
Anyway, you're trying to get me in trouble.
Son. No. Here's the thing about Popcast is the guests come on and be experts and I get in trouble. That's how this works. They know where to find.
Yeah.
Lauv's people know where to find me.
I'll expect an email from them later. But yeah, no. So yeah, the Lauv thing happened. And then of course we have Drake, and I'm sure we'll get to this, the Drake-Kendrick beef and Drake using Tupac and Snoop Dogg's voices. And that was done without consent. But think about how much less we all reacted to when that happened versus a year ago with Ghost Rider faking Drake, actually. It's ironic that Drake is the one now out here, quote unquote, stealing other people's voices when he first had his stolen. So I find it quite interesting that the goalpost is going to move.
Also, I remember feeling with the Ghost Rider moment, that quibble, the big conversation amongst me and like other hip hop fans and critics that I was talking to were very preoccupied with all of the little things that Drake does in songs that don't, you'd never see it on like notation. You'd never see it on a lyric sheet, but like when you hear it, when you feel it, when you hear it, and identifying the places in the Ghost Rider song where Ghost Rider failed at that. Now, obviously, as an accomplishment, it's a big accomplishment, but I remember most of my friends were kind of like, ah, the way that this word goes into this word, like Drake would never do that. He would leave a pause between A and B. That's how we thought about it. But I think what you just said is right, which is that was because it was such a novel use case. Now, like when Drake did, and we'll get to the Kendrick beef, and but when he did the Pac Snoop thing, yes, I could identify all that stuff where he failed at like sounding like Snoop, but I no longer expected it. It like something, the goalpost had shift. And I wonder, so Rachel, with that in mind, do these philosophical concerns matter at all, or have consumers and listeners already established almost like a parallel category? Like there is Drake music and then there is quote unquote Drake music.
Oh, that's a good question. I feel like for most people, this stuff is still so new. For 1 second, let's step back. AI generated music, or music that has used AI in some way, has been around for a long time. And it is true that in the past couple of years, it's actually developed quite rapidly in terms of being able to like really well mimic human made music, especially the, like, vocals and just layering of different things on top of each other. I feel like with Suno and Udio in particular, they really showed the average person like how far that stuff has developed in the last couple of years. But I feel like most people aren't super familiar with the idea of AI generated music. And so I do think that these questions of what is real, what is not real, what is artistry, what is human, I feel like those things matter. And at least they matter to me. And I, as a listener, I still want to know what's going on. Something is using AI simply as like a tool to build on a recording, to edit something. That's a little different from if you're wholly generating something. And going back to this Randy example, you said, what was it, 40 tracks were used?
I think the 40 vocal stems of 40 Randy Travis songs.
Okay, that seems pretty small for a data set to me. I feel like 40 of anything doth not a large data set make. So if you had more, if you want to make it sound better, add more.
You mentioned that obviously people have been using AI in various forms for a while. Maybe can we step back from this current moment and go back prior, before a year ago? What are some of the earlier examples of people attempting to bring AI technology into the music space before we get to this glut? I think we're like at a glut moment, even if most people don't realize we're at a glut moment, but I feel like we're there. What was happening 2 years ago, 4 years ago, dare I say 6, 8, 10 years ago that you set dare. The table for this? I dare.
Yeah. So I think the first time that I, as a technology journalist, became aware of using AI to wholly generate music would have been around 2016, when Google was working on what was called Project Magenta. And it was a research project, and it was more like, at the time they were doing like noodling on a piano. And it kind of blows my mind when I think about what you can do now very easily and cheaply versus what was then state of the art. And at that time, they couldn't get AI to form a coherent piece of music. It never ended. It was just kind of like tickling the ivories, which seemed really cool.
It was
at the time.
Jam band? Google was it? It was just a jam band?
If a jam band is just a piano, yeah, basically. It would just kind of keep going. And I kept being like, oh, I hope they release it, but they never released it. And then there are a few developments over the years. OpenAI actually had a project called Jukebox. I feel like nobody noticed it because it came out at the very beginning of the pandemic. It was like, I think it was like mid-March 2020. I was on maternity leave, so I obviously was like, whatever, I don't care. But they were using like major artist names and trying to generate music at the time. It sounds really weird. If you go online and look up OpenAI Jukebox, you'll find like a bunch of samples, and it's like, whoa, what is this? But yeah, over the past few years, with the rise of different kinds of generative models, AI generated voices getting better and better, it's kind of like a few different pieces of technology coming together to create what we have now. People like the UDO and Suno teams just kind of putting all these pieces together in a really smart way.
Before we take that any further, we're going to take a break real fast. Going into this break, here's something from UDO. UDO, this is a song. It comes with song titles. The song is City Sounds Unbound. This is from a prompt asking for a podcast theme song in the style of 90s New York hip hop. I will say this is a little bit more salt and pepper than 90s New York hip hop. It's giving 1987 to 1989, maybe more. But it does have that spare, crisp percussion. It does have that sassy vocal presentation. Again, it's great lulls. So this is City Sounds Unbound, Popcast theme song. We'll be back in a minute.
Popcast is John with the mic, no doubt. Weekly doses of the sound, hear the word spread out. In the city, be gritty. Topics dissected from the beats to the streets, always well connected. NY songs, the rhyme, making way so clear. Every tune that we drop, the world gotta hear. Hip-hop roots and the cracks in the pavement. Discuss those grooves where legend engravement. Popcast live, just vibe, stay true. From the vinyl to the modern, always something new.
Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made. Or how a wooden table is built, piece by piece. And in not-so-small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
I use the New York Times Games app every single day.
I love playing Connections.
With Connections, I need to twist my brain to see the different categories.
I think I know this connection. Look, Bath is a city in England, Sandwich is a city in England, Reading is a city in England, and I'm going to guess Derby is a city in England.
I started Wordle 194 days ago, and I haven't missed a day.
The New York Times Games app has all the games right there.
I absolutely love Spelling Bee. I always have to get Genius.
I've seen you yell at it and say, that should be a word.
Totally should be a word.
Sudoku is kind of my version of lifting heavy weights at the gym.
At this point, I'm probably more consistent with doing the crossword than brushing my teeth.
When I can finish a hard puzzle without pins, I feel like the smartest person in the world.
When I have to look up a clue to help me, I'm learning something new.
It gives me joy every single day.
Start playing in the New York Times Games app.
You can download it at nytimes.com/games app.
We've mentioned UDO and Suno a couple times. These are, it seems like, the two industry leaders at the moment in terms of, and for those who are listening who have not had a chance to play around with it, I do recommend the just toying around. You can make a bunch of songs at least for free if you're curious about the technology. The Popcast theme song at the beginning was made with Suno. The songs that you'll hear kind of sprinkle throughout were made with either Suno or UDO. What, first of all, on a baseline level, you go to the interface and you say, I would like a theme song for Popcast, the New York Times podcast, in the style of blank or whatever. The lyrics are about this. Or in maybe in one case, in UDO's case, you can actually write some lyrics that are then the song will be built around. But can we talk a little bit about what's underneath the hood? Because obviously this is something that neither company, I think, has said. There is a large model that this is trained on, that these programs are trained on. What do we know about those models?
We don't know that much about the training process of these. They've been very tight-lipped about it. Of course, there's quite a few models kind of looking at AI more broadly that have been fairly open about the fact that their data sets include copyrighted works. I think in music, because the entire music business is based off of exploiting copyrights and making money off of private ownership of songs, this is an extremely important thing for music lovers as well as musicians and labels and publishers to know about. And they've been pretty quiet about it. So I think that definitely has rubbed some people the wrong way. We don't know if it includes copyrighted works. There is a former Stability AI VP of audio who left the company, and he's founded his own nonprofit. It's called Fairly Trained. His name is Ed Newton Rex. And basically he's kind of made it his mission to talk about the training process of AI in music. And he did do, I think it was an op-ed for Music Business Worldwide, where he talked about how he was able to generate things that sounded extremely close to true copyrights, songs that we all know and love, by prompting Suno and Udio enough that they could get around to getting these copyrighted works pretty explicitly. So it does seem like that is a very good possibility to be part of the training set. But their terms and conditions, at least for Udio, which I checked out recently, does put the onus on users. So if a user wants to release a song, let's say it has a melody in it that's copyright from a copyrighted song, and it's bar for bar, or note for note, rather.
Word
and they
for
put
word,
it up there.
Bar for bar. Yeah. Doing a little Soulja Boy joke for all the heads.
And yeah, if you put that on Spotify and something were to happen and you were to get sued, I do believe the onus would be on you, given the terms and conditions. So that's definitely something to keep in mind when using these things.
Also, one thing that I think this came up in, maybe was it Brian Hyatt's Rolling Stone story about Suno? Interviewing one of the investors, and if I'm wrong, tell me. But I think interviewing one of the investors who essentially said, I number one, if this company already had deals with record labels, I wouldn't invest. Like, yeah, I basically want, on the one hand, I don't want to know exactly what the training model is. And also, it's better if we're not in bed with the record labels at this and the publishers at this point. But it does seem clear, much like Spotify itself or TikTok or eventually these programs, they will be in business with the record labels. That's what it feels like, inevitability. These kinds of relationships will be woven into artist contracts, be woven into songwriter contracts or producer contracts. Is it your understanding that that's something that's actively in motion, or does that still feel 1, 2, 3, 5 years down the road?
That is happening. There are definitely talks going on. We may also see some lawsuits, but there are definitely some talks going on.
I think that the ideal situation for the majors right now is I think what it seems to be their strategy is kind of picking and choosing certain music AI companies to kind of anoint as the ones that they want to succeed. And given they own the vast majority of important copyrights in music history, which is honestly, for recorded music, a relatively short history, I think they're trying to control the outcome and veer it in a certain direction. And they certainly want to participate in getting licenses for their works if that's what's needed. But we'll see what happens. I do think there is a possibility of a future where Suno and Udio become so entrenched in the creative process and become so popular that it could force the hand of music companies to come to the table and work with them, even though they might right now not be interested in that. But in the near term, I do think that kind of these more quote unquote fairly trained models that use licensed works, or they make their training data in-house even by hiring musicians to make a bunch of samples for them. I think that ideally that's what they're looking for.
Is that what's happening? Do you think that they're essentially, rather than if they're not training on publicly available or commercially available music, they're essentially hiring session musicians to be like, play me a hardcore song, play me an emo song, play me a this?
A lot of different models train in different ways. Like there's an AI music company called Soundful, and they train on one shots. So that's one type of thing instead of loops. A lot of people train on loops. Or I'm also seeing a lot of people are turning to production libraries. So people who make music that's cheap to be licensed for TV, film, YouTube videos, et cetera. And they're licensing those catalogs, and that can contain up to 1 million works, which it really puts a dent in things when you're trying to get there. But yeah, there are people who are hiring musicians just to feed the machine right now, which I think is a very interesting idea. As a musician, do you feel like you're training models to replace you in certain things? If these AI models get good enough, do they replace production libraries? Are the production libraries and these musicians contributing to speeding that up? Or is this all inevitable? And it's better to just get the money in the short term and take the bet on the long term.
I've got to assume those musicians are under NDAs if they're doing that. But if not, or if you want to break them, email anybody on this show. We'd love to hear more about that process. Okay, let me play devil's advocate for a second. Because one thing that happened after the Ghost Rider song, or at least one thing I was thinking about, was let's take Drake. Drake is incredibly famous, incredibly successful, and someone who genuinely engages in the meme ecosystem about Drake, both positive memes, negative memes. Drake understands how to make songs, how to create visual content, and also how to react to the inevitable kind of like effluvia on the internet that is made non-consensually about you. If I'm Drake, why don't I just make the Drake app, which can have varying levels of AI technology? The cheapest level is just Drake vocal filter. It's like we can run through this podcast through whatever that vocal filter is, and it just sounds like three Drakes talking to each other. The second level may be a higher level of training with song construction and more idiosyncrasies. Maybe the highest level is some combination of that, and then actually get to interacting with people who make OVO records to make it sound exactly like a Drake song. Why shouldn't that be a monetizable income stream that a smart artist would take advantage of? What's the downside of that?
Oh, man, there's a lot to unpack there. If you're an artist, I've been thinking about this a lot lately because I've been covering OpenAI and Scarlett Johansson's anger about OpenAI having a voice for ChatGPT that sounds similar to her voice, or that she believes firmly sounds similar to her. And a lot of people also sound similar to her. And I just keep thinking about how valuable your voice is when you are various types of artist. If you're an actor, obviously, if you are a singer, your voice is valuable to you. And also in some cases, like Drake, I think we can argue it's iconic, right? People can recognize it. They can hear it and go, oh, that's obviously this artist. So when you get to that level, which select few people are, I feel like it must be a very complicated thought process of, do I want to monetize? Like, we are getting to a point where you can totally build an app like that. It would be still quite a bit of work to make it sound really good, but you could totally do it. But to Kristen's earlier point about, do we participate now? Should I get the money for this now or not? I feel like it must be very tricky to decide what to do there. But do you really want to not have control over your voice? I feel like a lot of people would say, at least for now, no.
But won't that happen anyway? Because how far away is the technology where someone could just do that and not have to pay anybody to sound like Drake? Like, why wouldn't an artist proactively? It's already there, basically. So why wouldn't an artist get out? Like, in my mind, like the one of the downsides is obviously you have a bad actor, right? You have someone who uses it to make Drake say something objectionable. Like, think about Cameo and like people on Cameo being told to be like, say some things, and then it turns into white supremacist dog whistle or something. It's obviously you don't want the AI version of that. But barring that, assuming there's some intervention between you creating the thing and being able to share it publicly, why wouldn't this be a good idea for someone who's incredibly famous and is already going to get memed / AI'd? Kristen, what do you think?
I mean, I think that there are some artists who are already leaning in and trying to find controlled ways to do this. But I think that it's a whole spectrum. And I think at the end of the spectrum of being very fast and loose about this is like Grimes making her own AI model last year. She was very, very early on this. I think she was inspired by what happened with Ghost Rider. I know she was tweeting about that at the time. And then shortly thereafter, released her own voice model and said, basically, I don't care what y'all do with it. You can even release it commercially if you want, but I want 50% of whatever royalties you make from it. I've since talked to some other AI voice companies that are hoping to do kind of official partnership type stuff as their business model. And some of them have thought that there's not a ton of commercial value so far that we've seen from voice models. So like none of those Grimes AI songs that her fans made, I haven't heard of any of them making good money. There's one by Kito, K-I-T-O, using the AI Grimes model. That's the only one in the streaming economy. I don't even know how much that made. But so some people are thinking about monetizing it at the root. So whenever your voice is used by a fan and that fan pays a subscription fee to the service, then you get paid on that conversion. People are thinking of all sorts of ways to try to make this work for artists. But I think the challenge is, like, being a really good artist is curating yourself and selling a brand version of yourself. And I feel like that's never been more true than the age of social media and where we're at today. I think people really want to feel like their artist is someone who's like a guiding light. They know exactly who they are as a person and as art maker. So I think that this does get into slippery slope territory of when you start letting your fans pretend to be you. Do we really trust them to mark and say this is AI? Do we really trust them to follow the rules? But yeah, you could even argue, though, that we lost control of who we are on the internet a long time ago. So
that's sort of my feeling. My feeling is, no, I don't trust fans any more than I trust trolls or trust meme makers. Like, everybody is fundamentally untrustworthy. Anybody who's not the artist themselves is fundamentally untrustworthy. And I wonder if the next phase of this is going, and artistry writ broadly, not simply in music, across disciplines, is essentially, how do we monetize the mistrust that's already baked into online presentation of art? So that's on the one hand. The less cynical side of me says, let's say it's not a full Drake app like what I was describing, but let's say it's essentially an audition app. It's, I have a song that I think Drake should sample, or I have a vocal pattern that I think he might find useful. This I can see working really well in Nashville, which is very heavily a songwriter culture, and demos are pitched around constantly. Why not have a company and says, hey, I'm pitching this to Carrie Underwood. Here's the demo in Carrie Underwood voice, rather than hiring some random demo singer to sing it how they think Carrie Underwood might sing it. That feels like a semi-valid use case for some of this technology.
It's already being done that way. There's a lot of songwriters that are using AI voice filters privately, which I feel a lot better about, knowing that they're not being commercially released. There's kind of not a ton of harm. The only harm is potentially upsetting the artist by them receiving a demo and they're like, what the hell? Why am I on this track? I never recorded.
I sound terrible.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I mean, like, who knows? The session vocalist might have not nailed the performance in the style of you. But yeah, you're already seeing a lot of songwriters. I think I reported on this last summer, so it's been about a year of people doing this. And so it's a way to land demos. It is really, really hard to pitch a record and actually get it to land. And for a lot of songwriters, they'll do anything to try to make it better. Before AI, during my reporting of this, I found one songwriter who told me that he has this go-to guy that whenever he's pitching to Adam Levine, Maroon 5, he has an Adam Levine sound-alike session singer that he'll get his demos recorded with.
That's dark. That's the darkest thing maybe the darkest thing that's ever been said on Popcast. There's some poor person out there. His entire metier is Adam Levine sound-alike demos. Man, prayers up for you, bro.
This guy also has a go-to Justin Bieber vocalist. Like, slightly that being said, better. Slightly better. I don't know. It's, but at least you're, the argument would be like, well, at least in that instance, you're hiring a person to do a job where they get paid. But these guys are saying that session vocalists only make $100 to $250 it's kind of negligible side money for these people usually. So yeah, now people are using AI voice filters to try to better target pitch records. I've seen with some people, they'll include like a folder to the A&R that represents the artist. And in the folder will be the AI version and the clean, just regular demo version, so they can pick based on what the artist prefers, which I think is probably the smartest way to go about it without freaking someone out. But people are expecting this now. So I think it's less shocking than even a year ago.
Rachel, can we talk a little bit about legislation? Can we talk about what happened in Tennessee, but also how legislation is actually going to interact with some of these philosophical questions? Because I may be overly cynical in the sense that I think I accept that there is some disaggregation of the self that happens when you present creative things in an online space. and famous people who are discussed and memed intensely, probably somewhere in their spirit, understand that what's happening on the internet is 70% of them, or 30%, or 90%, or at any given moment, it's shifting. But obviously, legislation is not that nuanced. And I do think it's important that some of these things are enshrined in law. I wonder if you could talk about what happened in Tennessee, and then maybe some of the other things that are starting to conversations that are starting to happen about how to address protecting an artist's voice legally.
There's a lot of interesting stuff happening legally, like all across generative AI. With the music stuff, as you mentioned earlier, there's the Elvis Act in Tennessee. Gotta love an act named after the king.
Yeah, it's good.
I just thought that was really
funny.
You have
to have it. You have to have a heavy draw when you talk about it.
I apologize. But so like that in particular, I thought was very interesting. The aim of that is to protect musicians' rights. They want to protect them from AI impersonations in particular in a place like Tennessee that has such a heavy music, huge music scene, huge music history, obviously very focused on the humans that are making the music, either singing or just instrumenting. And so it does make sense that a place like Tennessee would come up with legislation like this. I think it's the only, there are very, like in general, there are very few laws in the United States related to AI in general. There are a handful that are related to like specific applications of technology. In Illinois, they have a law called BIPA, which is aimed at protecting people from unauthorized use of biometric data, for instance. But like you don't see much. And so this Elvis rule I thought was very interesting. What I'm wondering about is how they're going to enforce it. Like how, what is considered an artist under the law? Or someone with a recognizable voice. I mean, they're saying this rule is meant to protect people from unauthorized AI like reproductions of your voice. If you have a recognized voice, you don't want someone to just be able to make a new one. So what, how do you decide whose voice is, like, is there a threshold for like who's recognizable as an artist? I'm still a little unclear on that. And then also, what are you going to do when someone complains, and where do both offending parties have to be in Tennessee? So like, I think it's an interesting idea. I have a lot of questions. I think that what we're starting to see overall is a bunch of efforts, both at the federal level, at the state level, of people trying to regulate different types of generative AI. So AI that's generating text, generating sounds such as music, generating images. And a lot of the stuff is aimed at the training data. So should the prevailing law regarding training data scraped from the internet, which we have traditionally considered fair use, should that stay or should that change? That we might see that changing by medium. That's going to be interesting to see. So it's possible that a court would say companies like Suno and Udio can continue to scrape the internet forever for free to do whatever, but maybe something that's doing generative AI for images cannot. Like I've talked to some legal experts about that. And so it's very sticky right now. What's going to happen with the inputs? What's going to happen with the outputs? And I think it's going to take years for this to be resolved. Anyway,
we're going to take a quick break right now. Here's another Popcast theme song. This one is a Suno generation. This is the second generated song when I asked a very big picture prompt for a Popcast theme song, not specifying genre, but I think implying pop. This is sort of a light electropop, feels a little bit European. It's giving Cascada. It's giving Gigi D'Agostino. So anyway, here's this pop 2 from Suno Popcast theme song.
New York Times hotels to send. John Caramanica's here to play. Let's dive into music today. Talking beats and hidden tracks. Popcast got your music back. From latest hits to classic sound. Every genre can be found.
We have the beginning of the legal conversation about what's protectable, who, and how it's enforced. on some level, I've got to assume that the AI industry is also going to go on, if it hasn't already, something of a marketing blitz. And
oh, yes.
And when I was sort of alluding to this kind of like the tiers of AI, like kind of, is there good AI and bad AI? Is there funny AI and serious AI? With Ghostwriter, and there was that website or the channel that I emailed to you guys, There I Ruined It, where it's the Beach Boys covering 99 Problems, LOL. Like, on some level, is the AI industry going to use simple, accessible, winky winky stuff as like a, see, AI is your friend, it's just fun what we're doing here, while underneath, much more sinister and disruptive things are happening? Because I feel like we're already seeing the tiering of AI between kind of like publicly legible uses of AI and then far more abstruse and powerful uses of AI underneath. Is that just Suno and Udio marketing, essentially? Being like, here's a fun AI song, you guys should love it. And then you guys pay attention to that while we do the dirty work.
In general, kind of. I think it's more, a little more complicated than that. But yeah, if you think back a couple of years when there was a big backlash against facial recognition technology, you saw a lot of companies saying, please regulate us. We want to be regulated, yet nobody is coming up with rules. And I think you're seeing a similar thing, and we have seen over the past year or so. A lot of it is like application based, right? It's not like AI generally, because it's become so vast and there's so many different applications of what in the past we would have just thought of as like machine learning. But I think with the music stuff, I think it looks like the companies are looking more for partnerships. But yeah, I think there definitely is, like, the companies will say, please regulate us. But what they mean is, let us help you come up with the rules. Because of course, then the rules, it's sort of a fox in the hen house kind of situation. Let us help you come up with the rules. And those rules will necessarily be rules that we're okay with. And they will probably benefit us. Perhaps like a startup that's working on closed source models wants rules that help regulate open source models, for instance.
We've talked a lot about AI as a song making tool, or as a tool to help a person who makes songs make songs. AI is being used in a bunch of other ways in the music business. It's being used in playlisting, other kinds of large data model training. Can you talk a little bit about where's AI happening that we're not seeing? Everybody, again, we know about BBL Drizzy. We know about Drake rapping as Tupac and Snoop. Everybody knows about that. And I think, to your point, Rachel, the AI industry would be very happy if that's where public understanding of AI and music stopped. What's happening underneath that we should be mindful of?
I think that there's a lot of different applications of AI in the music business today that we don't talk about that often. The stuff that's not generative, the stuff that's not about music creation, that stuff is all still happening in a variety of ways. I think one of the most interesting and potentially helpful use cases for AI that we haven't talked about yet is royalty collection and processing. That's just notoriously a huge pain in the ass. And there's so many different little microtransactions every single time you stream a song. And then there's, in the case of certain rap songs, it could be with a bunch of samples, it could be up to like 30 songwriters. So then you have to divide that all up between all the right songwriters, get the money to them, get the money to their publisher. It's a mess. And I think a lot of people think we could be doing better in the music industry, getting correct metadata and kind of making sure to clean that stuff up. But in general, I do think that given there's just such a large, there's trillions of lines of transactions to process, AI will certainly be helpful in that case. It also, because it's so challenging, it makes it really hard for artists and songwriters to audit their record labels and music publishers. And so I've heard from some business managers that they're like really hoping that this is going to be a way to put some checks and balances on that and really sort through what their royalty statements are looking like. And in addition, you can see on a place like Spotify, they've integrated the AI DJ feature, which is pretty fun. I could see it being interesting in the future. In addition, they also have this beta AI playlisting tool where you can type in kind of a vibe and then it will generate a list of tracks. And I think that's fun and playful for now. I don't really think that it's that exciting right now, but maybe it could be. In general, with AI that interacts with the music business and interacts with music creation, a lot of this stuff, we're still figuring out what the actual use cases will be long term. Are some of these things just gimmicks for kids that are just having fun on the internet, or are there actual applications that will be commercially valuable? We don't know yet. I think that we're trying every single time that I'm talking to people, I'm always asking them, what ways are they using it that's actually going to be helpful for them or helpful for their fans? But yeah, there are quite a few things, including this AI DJ, AI playlisting features that Spotify have that are just kind of playful and fun. And we'll just see where it goes from there.
I haven't tried that, although it does make me want to see if it could figure out how to recreate what I played on my college radio show in 1995, if I just give it a few prompts and be like, this is what my radio show was like and it was about. Can you loosely estimate what a playlist was like?
John, you're too unique for that. I don't think it could do it.
That's exactly right. They weren't going to put the Quiet Storm in between the backpack rap. They weren't going to do that, but I did that. That's right. Rachel, what about you? Do you think there are either good AI or nefarious use cases that are lurking underneath the, like, high five, look at the joke we just made AI that people seem to be talking about?
I think there are always, this is like a really unsatisfying answer, but I feel like there are always good and bad uses for pretty much any technology, and AI is absolutely no exception. You can't really say this is good, this is bad categorically, because different people have different ideas. I think that what we're seeing with its use in the music industry is, as Kristen said, there's still a lot of figuring it out. But at the same time, I think it's interesting that, like, one of the uses of AI that the average person is most familiar with just is related to, like, song selection on Spotify. If it's just kind of going, it's creating like a radio station that's sort of tuned to you. I still find that kind of, like, weirdly magical, using that on Spotify or like Netflix. I'm like, how do they always know what I want? Well, obviously it's been trained on a ton of data. And every time I use it, I am like giving it yet more information about me that it can then mine to keep me glued to it in the future. That's a good thing and a bad thing, right? So a lot of these uses of AI are going to be a combination of both. And I feel like a lot of what we can do as consumers, we're journalists, but we also use these things. I think it's just important to be really mindful of what is going on behind the scenes as much as we can be. And then obviously as journalists, we have to interrogate them and tell everybody about it.
As we go out, is there for either of you a particular, whether it's a song or a particular moment that you've encountered in your reporting that you think people should know about that maybe they don't know, but that's not one of the kind of like 10 blaring red alarm screaming AI use cases of the last 12 months? Is there anything you want to point people to say this is interesting, fascinating, or clever that people don't know?
I have one. Okay. So I think, and maybe this might have just inspired me to actually write a story on it, but I have been talking with a bunch of artist managers who have said that the worst thing that you can ever have to get your artist to do is radio liners. It's like the,
oh yeah,
hey, this is Kristen and you're listening to Kiss FM. They hate that. It's like pulling teeth. And I very briefly worked at a record label where I was sent out to do that. And it was actually horrible. So I have heard that some managers have tried using AI to turn in AI radio liners.
Wait, did I read that in one of yours? I feel like I read about that in someone's story. Was it one of your stories?
So I like made a very quick mention of it as like a bullet point in a newsletter that I just started. Follow it. Machine Learning's billboard.com. So yeah. So, but I haven't done a full story on that. And I feel like now I should, now that we're talking about it. But I do think that that's really a fascinating way to streamline the process of music promotion, make your artists more available. That being said, if I was a radio station and I figured out that all of the liners I was getting were faked, I'd be pissed. So I don't know.
I actually low-key don't know if I'd be pissed. Also, if anybody wants to make one for podcasts, like, by all means, send one over. I don't care if it's AI.
We'll start.
Like, it'd be hilarious if it was. Frankly, it'd be funnier if it was AI.
Can we start this podcast with Adam Levine, AI? Adam Levine.
No, just you're ask listening the guy, to the real session musician.
No, I'm going to hire the Adam Levine guy. Yo, that's going to be my ultimate anniversary, like 10 years on podcast. whenever that happens.
So nice.
I'm gonna hire the Adam Levine guy to sing a podcast theme song in the voice of Adam Levine, one of the artists I've been absolutely the cruelest to in my critical career. But anyway, AI, if anyone wants to say an AI shout out, hilarious. I'll probably play it. Rachel, anything that you want to draw folks to?
One thing that I did when I was working on a feature about AI music recently and about Suno and Udio in particular was near the end of the process, after playing around with them, I went on to Spotify because I was just curious if these things were starting to trickle in there and just search for the word Suno. I would recommend that people do that and just kind of see. You can't guarantee that the stuff you're finding is made using Suno, but a lot of it sure sounds like it. There's still sort of a certain tone to these things and like kind of a slight weirdness to the song, like the way that the songs progress. You're like, that's not exactly what one would expect, but it is a nice way to get a sense for what people happen to be doing with it. That's sort of like percolating on Spotify. So that would be my suggestion, besides trying these out for yourself, is just go on Spotify and search for Suno, or maybe search for Udio. There's probably stuff from there on there too at this point.
One thing that we didn't actually explicitly get to are differences between Suno and Udio. And I do think it's worth saying. So I, in making a podcast theme song, which we've been hearing throughout the episode, I put the same prompts into Suno and Udio, basically cut and paste. Maybe I left out some punctuation, but essentially the same prompts. One thing I felt with Udio is it returned over and over again to the same lyrical themes. I didn't give any lyric prompts. I only gave topic prompt. There was beats and rhymes came up a lot in the Udio ones. Maybe three different ones in Udio used that or a version of that phrasing. Whereas I thought the Suno lyric generation felt a little bit more natural. Also, on the whole, I felt like the styles that it approximated better were styles that I already, maybe it's just my association, already associate with a kind of degree of digital texture, electropop or certain strains of hip hop. Whereas things that are a little bit more guitar driven or fundamentally melodic driven, I felt they struggled more with. I wonder, do you guys have ultimately, I think Suno was more effective than Udio for me in my task. Before we go, do you guys see the difference or feel the difference between the two? And where do you land?
I definitely noticed some big differences between the two when I was playing around with them. For me, Suno felt a little bit more intuitive to use. One thing that I would note is Suno uses ChatGPT to generate lyrics. So it's working with OpenAI's technology. Udio, off the top of my head, I'm not sure, but I do know that Suno uses ChatGPT. So if you sort of like the feel of ChatGPT, like I think we can all agree it has a style. That's where they're pulling from. And then it brings back. So the song lyrics and also song titles, I think, are all coming back. And then they're sort of like musicifying it. Udio, meanwhile, I think also the way they build the songs in Udio, in the kinds of chunks that they build, I found it a little bit more challenging to use. But I could also see how someone who has a greater understanding of music and song structure might actually find that more appealing.
In the stuff that I've made, I guess I've found a few more things in Suno that I've liked, but usually I'll create my own lyrics and just see where that takes me. So I don't know if that's made a difference, but I think they're both extremely advanced. I think one thing I don't think we explicitly said so far is that most music-related generative AI models that are out there today, either they do the voice or they do the track. Not both. And to see that Suno and Udio are doing both is really remarkable and something I have only seen probably in the last, I don't know, since the start of 2024-ish. But I think they're definitely neck and neck. That being said, something that should be noted about Suno is they just raised $125 million in their latest funding round. Udio, I'm pretty sure its latest funding round raised $10 million. That being said, who knows what their financials look like, why Suno wanted to raise so much, all that stuff. I'm not sure. But I am really curious to see what Suno comes up with all the money that they have just gotten from investors. So I'm really curious to see if in the 6 months from now, we're going to be talking about them being neck and neck or if one of them will pull away. But I guess it should be noted that also BBL Drizzy was made on Udio. And that turned out to be quite good and is something that I feel like I hear people humming and singing all the time.
Yeah, the most commercially successful or publicly recognizably successful AI generated track thus far. And to my point earlier about Drake, he just went and found a way to rap on it. So I'm just saying, any free ideas out here on Popcast? Rachel Metz, Krista Robinson, thanks for going into the brave new world with us. I'm confident we're going to be back talking about this again, probably sooner than we're all comfortable with.
Thank you so much for having us.
And that is our show. What a ride it has been. Every Popcast ever is at nytimes.com/popcast. Popcast Deluxe with me and Joe is at youtube.com/popcast, and subscribe all across the board. Email us, popcast@nytimes.com. Get in the Discord, get in the Facebook group, tinyurl.com/popcastdiscord or /popcastfacebook. The stickers are at itsthepopcast.myshopify.com. There's a Zazzle shop. I put some mugs in there, some buttons, some baby onesies. Go nuts. Knock yourself out. We're going to have more on the merch stuff soon. We will let you know. As always, our producer is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We'll be back next week. Let's go out with another UDO-generated Popcast theme song. This is also made to the general prompt for a theme song, sort of in a pop style. Somehow, this is extremely British. This is very dry, 90s, light, a little bit sour even, British-esque presentation of a pop song. This is Tune In, Feel Good, Popcast theme song. We're out.
John's got the beat, keep you grinning. Oh, listen. You'll be feeling mighty.